Hey, buddy, welcome to MatMan. I'm Andrew Zarian. This is a another one of our interviews that we're doing. Last week, we had Justin Wang on from YouTube Popularity.
Nice.
Yeah, big-time YouTube popular guy. And today, I have an even bigger star, Harry Tarjanian.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
The Harry Tarjanian from Capital Wrestling.
That's right.
From stand-up comedy, from everywhere.
I'm all over the place, Andrew.
You are all over the place.
I get all over the place. You know, I see something, I just like doing it. I go all in.
Yeah, I tend to have the same exact problem.
Yeah.
You know, that's not a healthy...
No, it's problematic. I didn't anticipate ever owning a wrestling company. Now here, I just wanted to enjoy it, but nope. Too bad.
My wife said something so good to me once. She goes, Andrew, you know what your problem is? I have two problems. One, I only commit 75% of the time to something. I never go 100%, right?
You do?
75%. Oh. I'm Mr. 75%. I like to have enough success where I could have my freedom also.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
The other thing is I destroy things that I love by making it a job.
Yeah, that's the weird part.
I love technology. And I ended up doing a tech podcast, and I hate it now. I love professional wrestling, and I'm so engulfed in professional wrestling now that I am on the verge of hating everything about professional wrestling.
Sure.
In a good way, though.
Well, I always wonder that about, like...
Do me a favor. Your thing is coming a little loose.
Which one is
it? Yeah, plug that. Push that thing all the way in. The cable.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I'm
so
sorry.
Oh, my God.
There we go.
Nobody heard the problems that we...
Oh, okay.
Except for me.
That we were complaining. Okay, fair enough. So I always wonder that about a guy like Dave Meltzer, right?
Yeah.
Like, Dave Meltzer has not watched a wrestling match without reviewing it.
As a fan, yeah.
As a fan. And at some point, can you even enjoy that at any point? You know, I mean, it's been, what, 30 years?
30
maybe more than
years,
that?
Yeah. I was talking to Rich about that. Like, I think it's really unhealthy how wrestling fans watch wrestling because everybody watches it as a critic. Nobody watches it as if... with the suspension of disbelief where let me clarify. Most people that watch professional wrestling, the 3 million people a week that watch Raw, majority of those people are watching it as a fan.
Sure.
There is a subset of about 500,000 people to, you know, something around there that watch it as a critic, almost like a sycophant.
Yeah.
You know, and it's very unhealthy. Whenever I watch wrestling, I am able to kind of separate the two, and I watch it as a fan, and then I analyze it secondary rather than doing it the opposite way, where
sure.
You analyze, then you're a fan.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it's hard. It's also hard for me. I'm in the entertainment business aside from wrestling.
Doing for years, comedy in many things.
Podcasting, and which you can check out the Beige Phillips show, by the way. I might as well throw all the plugs as we go.
I gotta tell you, you have invited me about 4 times now.
Yes.
The worst timing.
Oh,
it's been
we don't do a lot in advance.
It's been on
our end.
No. In my life.
Oh, okay.
It's always been at the worst time in my life where I'm on the verge of a mental break.
Sure.
Or a major career shift.
Yeah.
I promise you, the next time you invite me,
okay.
If I have like 2 days, I will get my life together and be on the show.
Well,
because I think it's a phenomenal show.
Yeah.
I think you guys do a great job.
Well, thank you.
And I would love to be on. And I feel like such a jerk every time you reach out to me. And I'm like, sorry, man, can't do it today.
You don't have to feel bad about that. I also, in all fairness, I also do. We do a lot of that last minute because we also like our freedom. So rather than being stuck to one day a week, we just kind of do it whenever our schedule, which is a blessing and a curse.
Sure.
So sometimes we'll just literally spur them on. Oh, we got to do one this week. Forgot about that. We got 2 days to book somebody. But Beige Phillips Show, Man School 202, you know, it's a great relationship sex advice podcast. It's really good. But going back to what we're talking about, when I watch it now, it becomes a little more difficult, especially now that I'm running a company.
Yeah.
That I'm involved with a company. I'm doing color commentary for the company.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to watch things that I like and why does this work and why doesn't that work? You know, it becomes hard to just enjoy. I find myself bitching a lot and then I have to pull back and go, all right, let's relax. But then they'll do stuff like they'll put the tag team championships on the Revival,
and then
have them lose 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And it's weird because Matt Ryan, who's obviously in the company as well, you know, another part of Capital,
another
or partner. The part of Capital Wrestling, let's be honest. And he'll be like, no, you don't know where they're booking. I'm like, shut up. This makes no sense.
Yeah.
Stop trying to justify it. Well, they're not technically buried. They made it, you know, it was a competitive match. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah.
They just won the tag title, you know. But then I have to pull back from it. But it's hard. You know, I love doing the color commentary. And that's also the reason, like, the balance of trying not to get to if you love something so much and then you if you see this the way the sausage is made, it becomes sure. gross, right? So there's a lot of work that goes into it.
Oh, trust me.
And,
yeah.
And so even with
dealing with just dealing with wrestlers. I mean not sure. not all of them. I'm not saying I think you guys have a great crew, but
sure, yeah.
just knowing how much finesse is required with certain God, things yeah. that you do, you start appreciating it a little bit differently. And
yeah.
I think that you and Matt and myself, we kind of see it in a different light. Rather than, like the revival thing is a great reason, but maybe there's something happening 6 weeks from now that they need to lose in these 2 weeks. The other thing is maybe we think too much about that and it was on a whim, like, oh, you guys are losing tonight. Goodbye.
Yeah, but I don't like that it's on a whim.
Maybe,
do you understand?
Yeah,
from a
yeah.
television standpoint, yeah. if it wasn't wrestling, if I was writing a scripted series week to week, because I've been in writers' rooms and things, if you were writing on a whim, that would be the death of the show. You can't just write on a whim,
yeah.
because that's the it destroys your characters on the show. But wrestling is somewhat different, so it's hard. And I try to be like, well, maybe later down the line. And 9 times out of 10, that never happens.
So
you know what I mean?
In the 2000s, after Russo left, Chris Christie, not the governor,
not the Fatso governor.
I would have loved it to be the Fatso governor of New Jersey. Why don't you do the Sopranos every week? Chris became like head of creative.
Yeah.
And he was an MTV guy. This is a weird thing that a lot of people don't know. My wife's cousin is a creator of Celebrity Deathmatch.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Eric Fogel.
All right.
One of the nicest guys ever. He was, I see him whenever I'm in California. This guy, he did the Head, MTV series, The Head. He did Celebrity Deathmatch, Star Valence, that was on the E! Channel.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that.
He does a bunch of, Disney stuff now. But okay, Celebrity cool. Deathmatch is coming back, and they're going to be doing that again. But I was talking to him, and they worked together, Chris and him. This guy, Chris, was one of the most brilliant storyboard guys.
Yeah.
Where he was all about canny, right? He knew what was happening, and he would essentially, like a savant, he would take the whiteboard and then he would map out everything that was happening, and he wanted everything to make sense. So if
sure.
Eddie Guerrero was having a feud with Chris Jericho, and somehow Chris and Triple H are going to wrestle 6 months from now, that has to make sense on that path.
Sure,
they mocked him. They thought he was nuts. They said this isn't the movies. This is professional wrestling. They essentially they were.
That's the way they used to do it, though.
Well, not to that extent. He was really...
really ill about it.
Because he was writing like a TV show. If you're writing
yeah.
it, like you said, and you've written, you've produced, you've done all this stuff.
Sure, yeah.
If you are writing, if you're writing and this is A, and you got B, and you got C, I'm writing on a piece of paper
right.
with my plugs right now for March 9th on the Fight Network.
That's
for
right,
Capital
March
Wrestling.
9th in the UK, the United Kingdom. You can check us out on the Fight app here in America and all over the place.
So if you're writing this...
Yeah.
And you need X, Y, and Z to happen on this path. You should know everything that happened, because if you're writing week to week or every other week, you're not going to remember week 6 what happened in week 2.
No, but
unless you storyboard
of course.
It out.
Yeah.
They hated his process. They thought he was stupid. This poor guy, by the way, one of the best ratings that they had, storyline wise, everything made sense.
What was he writing at the time? The whole company, or
was it
separate brands?
He was one of the head of creative. It was him and Steph, essentially.
Okay.
Stephanie actually took over for him because he unfortunately passed away. He got diagnosed with cancer, and it was a very quick passing away for him. But he was a brilliant writer in that capacity. But people like Bruce Pritchard and like wrestling guys kind of mock him on his ability and how good of a writer he was. But I know people like my cousin-in-law, I guess, that worked with him, and he says he was an unbelievable writer, phenomenal guy to work
right.
with.
Right, but it's weird because there has to be a certain balance that I get that they don't – wrestling people might deal with that differently because you have to anticipate injuries, and you also change a lot of that based on the audience, supposedly.
Yeah.
Except when you don't want to.
Do me a favor. Pull that plug. I don't know what's going on with that thing.
Is it the plug?
Yeah, I think it doesn't like you. There you go. Just give it some slack.
There we go. Maybe
yeah.
I'm stepping on it.
Maybe. It's okay.
Away from it.
So I love having these conversations with you.
Yeah.
And I'm not a big fan of the traditional interview and plug thing.
Sure.
I kind of like going into it, but I do want to talk about Capital Wrestling
sure.
a little bit.
Well, this is all about sort of the creative process
yeah.
is about, for me right now in wrestling anyway, is Capital Wrestling, because we're doing episodic television, which not a lot of independent companies are.
Not many.
And dare I say it, even if they are, they're not doing it as well as we are.
Yeah. So you guys have it's almost 2 years now, right?
Yeah.
Because I've been there since I guess the beginning of this to some capacity. I'm an executive producer.
That's right.
But I my role a little bit is more of a think tank for Matt.
Sure.
When he's losing his mind.
Sure. Yeah. Which
and
is quite often.
I kind of take him off the ledge when he's about to set everything on fire. You know, I think input from everybody's great, and I think it's a positive because you need very different visions in order to create something great, and which you guys are doing over there.
Yeah.
You do weekly episodic professional wrestling on the internet, on television.
Yeah.
I kind of want to talk about the conception of that because, like you said, not a lot of people do that, and a very small portion do it well. And I'm not talking about MLW that has a budget.
They have a budget.
About funding and like that. This is truly independent.
Sure, yeah.
There aren't...
we don't have a big corporate company funding this.
There's not a...
And no offense to MLW, but that's... Listen, if we could get that,
we would absolutely take that.
So it's not at all... and they do find stuff there as well.
Listen, it's done on a shoestring budget.
Absolutely,
and the fact that for 2 years, it's been able to kind of go along and put this together with great acts like Sonny Kiss, for example. Sonny Kiss was your world champion. He is now a highlight in AEW.
Yeah, he's going to be a big part, and he's going to be a big star there.
Yeah, big star. Very talented. I called his match with, it was for NLW, and I actually ended up getting that gig because that's how I met Matt. He couldn't do that show.
Oh, okay.
So I did it in Deer Park. I was doing color, and JD from New York was doing play-by-play.
Oh, okay.
Very right. different. I have to tell you, nicest guy ever. Jerry is a sweetheart to deal with. His content, he's very polarizing as a character when he's doing it. Great play-by-play guy. I really enjoyed it. But him and Matt call Hawk together.
Yeah, they do.
So
yeah.
I had a chance to work with Jerry. I didn't know a lot of these guys going into it. I did some homework.
Yeah.
But I saw David Starr stood out. Sonny stood out. Matt McIntosh stood out.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Another guy that you know who stood out? Yeah. Rude Boy Riley.
He did.
He did.
Well, I mean,
he did.
Here's the thing about Rude Boy. He was on a way to a really, to me, a promising
tremendous career.
He was one of the people I saw. I go, that guy has a lot of star power. He's got a great look. His work is great. And there's just something about.
I saw him and David Starr put on a great match.
And
great match.
And it's unfortunate that is I guess you could you call them demons? Because demons usually refer to
I guess
to drugs and alcohol.
Yeah, listen, it's
well,
a, it's
I
a
did call
thing.
A match. Here's a little secret. He was on the first Capitol Wrestling
he
show
was.
2 days before he was I believe arrested.
Yeah.
And so I remember calling that match and going, "You're gonna hear a lot from this kid."
Yeah.
I mean, when you watch it back, we never aired it, but when you watch it back, my commentary, it's almost like I'm doing it sarcastically. This guy's got a bright future, nothing is gonna get in this kid's way.
Listen, man,
mark my words.
It's still to the end of the day, it's still a very carny business.
Yeah.
You deal with very different types of people.
It's gonna happen. But
Mike Law, another great Mike Law
is fantastic.
What a nice guy, huh?
Mike Law is, he's great. People love him. He's got a great gimmick, so to speak. But his work speaks for itself once he's in the ring. Matt McIntosh is fantastic. Yeah. So who is our current champion in Capitol Wrestling. By the way, March 9th, we are going to be in Hoboken, New Jersey, doing the next set of TV tapings. And it's really, we've really hit our groove with that. I'm really proud. I think the last two TV tapings have been the best set of shows we've done, period, in our entire run.
Yeah, listen, man, the show's looking great.
Yeah, and that's a lot of that. You talk about the inception of that. A lot of that is thanks to our director Zane Decker, who
I told Matt.
Yeah,
I said whatever you do,
yeah,
don't this up with him.
Yeah,
because
Zane is the heart and soul,
really
of that.
Talented,
and he's and it's so here's the thing about Capitol Wrestling that's kind of it is. I equate it to the ECW run where there are a lot of people. And so it's not just Matt. There's a lot of people behind it. Him and Marcus Dowling founded the company together with this idea of they wanted to go back to old school wrestling.
Yeah.
You know, the type of wrestling that they enjoyed growing up. And that was more episodic television. So wrestling, in a weird way, it's almost the best it's ever been. So even though people are bitching and complaining, you're wrong. Just know that you're wrong. Because right now is the best time to ever be a wrestling fan, because it's all out there. Any type of wrestling you want to see, you can see it. The only problem with that is the thing that's hard to make is television. That's two separate things. So a lot of companies have these great cards, these great matches.
Yeah.
But a lot of companies have great matches.
That's it. Yeah, that's it. What it is.
And for me growing up, the thing I loved most about wrestling to this day is the stories. Because I can see a lot of great matches, you know, but the stories make it interesting. I'll watch Raw. It's a lot to watch, and I love it, but I'll leave it on in the background because I'm doing other stuff. I can't sit there and watch. And
well, I think you kind of hit the nail on the head, especially with Ryan. By the way, are you going somewhere after this?
No, I'm.
You want to go for lunch?
Yeah, we'll do lunch. Okay, perfect. We'll do a little lunch.
You see, this is my flow. This is how I like to do an interview.
Yeah.
By the way, talking about a great interview, I do want to say, if anybody is interested in this, Joe Rogan and Alex Jones.
Oh, my goodness.
I have been fixated on this interview. I have been watching it over and over again. And my wife yesterday comes in. She goes, you just watched this yesterday. I'm like, I know, but I need to watch it again. She goes, why? I'm like, there's so much. If anybody is a fact checker, it is an impossible task. God forbid.
You're break your wrist.
You work for the Washington Post or the New York Times, and you have to fact check Alex Jones saying interdimensional beings have come in.
How do you,
the Nazis have been on the moon since 1964.
How do you fact check space Nazis? We got them. They're going to be here.
How do you do it?
Sooner than later. Trust me, Joe. I'm telling you. So how do you fact check that?
How do you fact check that? Right. I've also, there have been many times that I get drunk when I do Mad Men After Dark, and I go into Alex Jones ranting about professional wrestling and about Pat Patterson and Bruno Sammartino being in a love relationship.
Oh, really?
I'm telling you
right now, it's happened.
It's happened.
WWE won't acknowledge it, but I have documentation and tape recordings of it. You can find out.
You know, my good friend Wahoo McDaniel sold me. I highly suggest you guys check it out. So. When you're writing episodic television, you also don't have the luxury of knowing that everybody on TV taping one will be at TV taping two.
No, it's very, and it becomes quite difficult. So that's the other thing with booking, especially for a company like ours. I mean, we try to, you know, we've had to change how we do things. Yeah. We can't book month to month because when you do TV, it makes it difficult. So that's why we've tried to stay in the same venue.
Guys get signed.
Yeah. Guys get double booked, and then other companies don't necessarily want to work with you to accommodate that because they don't care, you know? And so that sometimes things happen with that, and it becomes frustrating, but you have to, Matt, as a guy, you know, and everybody in creative has to book around that. We've got a great creative team, by the way, just so many people involved, and I don't want to list everybody's names because I will forget them.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's a lot of people involved
in
who
contribute. Yeah.
You know, like, and it's a very open.
Who's the final decision maker? Like, I'm curious. I throw Matt ideas for booking constantly.
Sure.
Yeah. Right. If something pops in my mind, I'll throw it at him. I don't necessarily know if he's used them or if he doesn't. I don't know. But I throw ideas. What's the process with the decision making with the booking? Because obviously you have a lot of influence because you come from a writing background, a comedy background. I know Steph is very talented.
Steph Satilli, who
phenomenal,
is, aka Portia Vaughn.
I have to tell you, she's one of my favorite.
Yeah.
Anytime, you know, I go based on if I'm scrolling, right? I think that's a good gauge.
If you're
scrolling and then you stop.
Yeah.
Every time I see a video of hers, I stop and I watch it, and she's so good.
She's fantastic. So well, it's interesting because she doesn't come from a wrestling background. I mean, she was a fan.
Yeah.
But she was an actress first, so it's kind of like that's the
other
thing.
It works.
It works. It was her idea. That character was her idea, and Matt, just having to know Matt, and also Marcus was encouraging of that as well.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you know what? Let's do something with her because she's super talented, and she came up with this idea, sort of like to mock, sort of like a Lena Dunham style character, even though she loves Lena Dunham.
That's so funny.
Yeah, and so they're like, let's just do it. And that's the creative freedom. And if it doesn't work, they'll scale it back and go, this is what you have to fix. But when it does work, they leave you alone. You know, so as far as the commentary goes, myself, Stephen James is the play-by-play guy, one of the best play-by-play guys in the business.
Yeah, really good guy.
Really good guy. And so we'll come up with ideas, and we're just kind of left to our own devices other than this is the story you got to get across. So it's knowing when you have somebody who has the – also, it's also because you're so busy, you shouldn't, in theory, micromanage everything.
Sure, absolutely.
Except some people do.
We're creative, though. How does it work? Obviously, you have a couple of people involved in the actual story, right? Who writes the stories? Is it Matt?
Matt ultimately, at the end of the day, Matt Ryan is the, now it's become structured. It was sort of a committee up front of a couple people, him, Marcus Dowling, and then we brought in Ash Samuels to formerly of Special K, and we also have Deranged, formerly of Ring of Honor, pitching ideas and things. But ultimately, at the end of the day, Matt's the one writing the television. I think him and Marcus would have some say back and forth on it. But now it's become Matt has the final say, just to make it simplified.
Do you think that works better than a committee?
Well, what is a committee technically? Because I've never worked in a committee. Like, people pitch ideas, but ultimately, how do they settle the ideas in a committee?
So, well, that's the big thing, right? So what would happen is, okay, you're assigned with writing the women. You're assigned with writing this match. You're assigned with writing this storyline. And then you just let it go and you put it together. I've seen that happen. I'm not a fan of that because then there's no concurrent flow amongst different angles and stories. I do think a final say is always the answer.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, you have to have that because otherwise the company is in multiple directions.
Yeah.
And
Not a good. No. Kind of want everything to kind of flow
and we've
together.
Dealt with that. Those were some of the growing pains we dealt with because, let's say, Marcus would... have an idea or something and that it would be counterintuitive to what we did, or he would do something day of show and vice versa, where we'd be like, oh no, that didn't mesh with what we were trying to do, you know, and everyone does it from both ends. So ultimately you do need one voice to kind of go, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And it's, you know, it's very complex because like you said, there's booking with people. With an independent company, it becomes a lot harder because because we're doing television, but we're still an independent company. So we don't have exclusive contracts with anybody. That's not a big secret.
Yeah.
You know, so if people have other bookings,
they take it.
They can take
it.
We try to book in advance, but also we're trying to make sure. WrestleMania weekend, for example, is a thing that becomes very complicated for us.
Well, it's become complicated for many reasons, right?
Sure. Yeah. But it becomes even more so when you're trying to do television.
Okay. So you have to run a show WrestleMania weekend, right? You have to.
You know, for a while we didn't. We didn't want to.
At this point.
And now it's here this year.
Now you're in New York.
We're going to. So, and I don't want to announce it yet because we're still like, we're still finalizing details.
Okay.
Because the other thing is, when do you run?
Yeah, when do
you run? Now, the one thing we do know we're running is it's already sold out, but I'll plug it anyway because it's just cool to say it. Seth Rollins.
Seminar.
The seminar that he's doing. And luckily we're part of running that and helping him organize that here in New York City. That's just cool to be involved with. That's
Absolutely.
Already sold out.
What day is that?
That's on Thursday. I forget what
the
date is.
Have you seen that WrestleMania week schedule that's going around
with all the
shows? Holy moly.
Well, we're on it.
You are on it.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
I have...
But I hadn't looked at it, to be honest.
I have not seen... we're going back a couple of years ago when WrestleMania was in New York, 29. There were independent shows, not to this level.
No.
Whatsoever. It is a
very
different...
Well, last time it went down here, when what was it?
29,
right?
Yeah.
So what they did was, there was just WrestleCon, really, was what it was, right? WrestleCon,
there were a couple independent... I think...
were there a couple local shows?
I think maybe Jack Sabbath ran a show.
Okay, but those were guys that were kind of local anyway.
Local guys, yeah.
So that was all in one facility, though. That was the weird thing. The WrestleCon was at the Sea Caucus Convention Center.
Yes, that's what it was.
And now it's become this thing of like, that's not what's happening, my understanding.
You're running a show in Jamaica. You're running a show in Newark. You're running a show in Jersey, multiple shows in Jersey City.
Yeah.
Brooklyn is running a bunch of shows.
I think
La Boom is running a bunch of shows.
Now, what do you think? Is that just independent companies making the best
Renaissance.
Of it?
It's the renaissance of professional wrestling. No matter... I get goosebumps whenever I talk about it because we were talking about ruining things that you absolutely love.
Yeah.
I don't get this feeling about any other, and I'm involved in many business. Like, I have a couple businesses.
Sure, yeah.
There's nothing other like that is work for me that gives me that feeling.
Really?
Right? Other than professional wrestling. Yeah.
Interesting.
I love it because I have such an emotional connection to it between my father and my grandfather.
Same here. Family stuff.
Yeah, my grandfather was a pro bodybuilder. He used to work out with Bruno.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's my weird...
I didn't know that.
Yeah,
that's
cool. Yeah, they were workout buddies. And then my father...
Is that why you have a dumbbell? Not a dumbbell. What do you call it? Just tell you how I don't lift weights.
Yeah.
What do you call it?
Dumbbells?
No, not dumbbells. One bar. Us in your backyard. Oh, it's just rusting away.
Yeah, but that's my father's. That's my father's.
Does he still live?
He still does. Yeah,
that's so crazy.
Yeah.
He just has like a.
He still works out.
A weight bar. Or
and
whatever.
I got a gym in the kids room. That was the training room, and now it's the kids gym.
Oh wow.
Kids room. So I have a very emotional connection to professional wrestling. I remember my father waking me up at 6 a.m. You know, to come downstairs to watch Saturday morning cartoons, and we watched Superstars. I remember. Prime time wrestling would be on, and my father would get me out, and we would go down to the living room and watch wrestling.
Oh my
so
God.
I have this very emotional, positive feeling towards
you love
professional.
It, yeah.
I do. I absolutely love it. I don't think the popularity of wrestling in my entire lifetime has been to this level that it is today.
No, I agree.
You can talk about
this
the '80s
the first
boom.
Time.
Talk about the '80s boom all you want. You talk about the Attitude Era. There is nothing. In the whole history of professional wrestling, this is the moment. This is the renaissance, more than it was in the 80s and the 70s and the 90s.
Well, it's also more spread out because, I mean, the popularity of wrestling in the 80s was two companies, basically. Three companies, I guess, in America anyway.
AWA, NWA, WWE.
And in the 90s, it just became two. Now it's, like you said, this WrestleMania weekend schedule is indicative of what the hell is going on, which is there are so many different companies running so many different shows. And that's incredible. That's why I say if you're a wrestling fan and you're bitching and moaning about watching wrestling now, then you're just not a fan. I mean, this is the best time. I'm almost glad it didn't exist like
before.
This because I would have gotten nothing done in my life.
Here's a question for you. When we're around the same age. When we were growing up, what was independent wrestling? You know what I remember? I have a distinct memory of independent wrestling. You tell me what yours is.
I didn't have an understanding of independent wrestling when I was a little kid.
I didn't know Bushwhacker Luke appearing at some show in New Jersey with Doink the Clown.
Wow.
That was my memory of independent wrestling, because that's all you had. You would have just names from Greg the Hammer Valentine.
Yeah, see, to me, that the image I get of what it would have been was school gymnasium.
Yeah.
And then a couple of the couple guys who were in the WWE not that long ago, but maybe 2 or 3 years ago. Doing a couple things, and then a lot of guys you've never seen or heard of, some of whom don't look that good, weren't in great
shape.
It was
really sad.
Yeah,
and I think now we have a different generation of kids that have grown up with, to them, the worst independent wrestling was probably Ring of Honor. You know, that's their concept of independent wrestling. They grew up, my brother's a little, if you're 21 years old now, if you're 18 years old, you have no concept of how bad independent wrestling was because it was it was still outlaw wrestling. You had the Bushwhackers doing appearances, wrestling some no-name guy. You had very depressing older guys that do it just for the money for $50 or $100, and they're doing like 6 of these on a weekend. Just to get by. It was not what it is today.
Those shows still exist.
They do. Of course they do.
But there is a lot of young, fresh talent like out there where you could see shows of people who aren't on television or weren't on television and still see a good show.
Yeah.
So our company, I'm super proud of. And by the way, our company is not, I'm not sitting here claiming that we have the best roster in the world, because there are other companies with a better roster. We have a lot of talented guys, super talented people. But we pride ourselves on doing different things creatively with them for television that nobody else is doing.
Yeah.
But at the same time, we still have really talented wrestlers like Matt McIntosh. To me, he's our champion right now, and deservedly so, because he's amazing.
Guy. Yeah,
we have Paul Jourdain.
He's a big boy. Yeah, Paul Jourdain. How tall is he?
I should know this because I'm a color commentator, but I want to say 6'6".
Yeah, he's a big guy.
6'7".
And he's young.
He's a young guy. Right. He's young and so much potential, so much size, a great look to him.
Yeah.
Darius Carter, who just manages to get disdain from people.
Yeah.
So we have a lot of really talented people. And I'm forgetting some people on the thing, but and new talent coming in. Casey Navarro, I think, is going to be a big star. Anthony Bowens. So... We have a lot of great wrestlers, but to me, the part that I loved growing up about wrestling was the story stuff. You know, the Undertaker locking the Ultimate Warrior in a casket.
In a casket, yeah.
Jake the Snake taking a cobra and making him bite Randy Savage on
the arm.
What's going
to happen next week?
Right.
You know, that's the moment. What's happening next week? And did you watch Raw this week?
I did watch Raw this week,
They kind of did that. They kind of did. Everything they did led to next week.
Yeah. Yeah, which I'm happy about.
Very happy. I thought the Batista finish was great. They told a great story there. It was unpredictable.
A great mislead. Yeah, you know, I love it.
I love a great mislead. That's the way to put it. And that's what makes people tune in week after week. You guys attempt to do that. You guys try to do that with your TV every week. Obviously, sometimes it doesn't work, or sometimes there are things that happen. But you guys are a fan of storylines and sticking to it. What's the balance, you think, with attention to storyline and attention to in-ring?
See, I'm very biased towards storyline.
Okay.
So, obviously, you need the work in-ring to be good. Otherwise, the whole thing falls apart. But I'd rather watch a decent match with a great storyline than watch a really great match with no storyline. But I'm very biased to that.
Because, I agree with that. I'm in the same boat as you, by the way.
Because, to me, it's like, and this is sort of a what do they call it, a guilt of riches, like you just have so much great wrestling. I remember one time going, oh, here's how much wrestling is going on. I go, man, you know, AJ Styles, I wonder why they haven't done the AJ Styles-Brock Lesnar match yet. They should really, that would be so awesome.
Yeah.
Well, not only did they do it, watched it.
And they did it they did it once. Yeah, no, they didn't do it twice.
But
they did
that's
it once,
what
yeah.
I was leading up. I was like, oh, are they going to do AJ Styles versus Brock Lesnar? They should do the, man, it would be great if they did that. Again, it happened. I watched it and loved it.
Yeah, and you don't remember.
Because I remember when I rewatched the clips, I go, oh, I remember that match. That was a great match.
Yeah.
But you got so much going on. I don't know if it's life or just the amount of wrestling. It is a little tougher to keep up with it all because, again, there's 12 pay-per-views a year instead of four. And there's 3 hours instead of, you know, 1 hour on the weekend. So a lot of that is tough to keep up with. For me, the storylines are something that can differentiate yourself from other companies as well.
Yeah.
Because even if we have wrestlers that do wrestle for other companies, they're not necessarily exclusive to us. You're going to see something different when they come to us because the stories are going to be different and no one does the stories. Again, Zane Decker is a brilliant. And again, this is not all about me pushing the Capital product, but it's related in what I love about doing it, which is directing, you know, vignettes, doing interviews, which I think is such an important part that a lot of independent companies and a lot of independent wrestlers don't get to do. You know, the backstage interviews, cutting preview packages for a match, you know, and that's an interesting skill that they get to learn in our company as well. But I think all that builds up to a match, you know, this is weird. I also cover boxing.
You do. Yeah.
Separately.
Yeah.
Sort of as a freelancer.
Well, by the way, they're in a boom right now. Boxing is in a boom with their heavyweight division. You know, it's coming back.
But there's also a big shift that's happening in boxing.
In what way?
Because of DAZN. DAZN is a streaming service, a la either Netflix or, I guess...
Well, Canelo's now with them.
Canelo signed with DAZN. That's a huge thing because now it's going to go from... And it complicates things because...
And HBO's out of the game.
HBO's completely out of the game for the first time in 45 years. But it complicates things because now you have... Well, do I want to pay for this? I'm not going to pay $100 for this fight when I could pay $10 a month for the zone, but you still got guys who are making their living over here on the right
side,
on the pay-per-view side. So it's going to be weird where it shifts. I think it's an inevitable change that's going to happen
with pay-per-view
with the streaming services.
The problem with the streaming services is, I was talking to someone that knows a little bit about this, right?
Yeah.
A lot of the money that
and I'll
comes...
circle back to storyline.
No. But this is actually
related.
Great. The problem with the pay-per-view business, is cut and dry, right? You're a venue. A lot of the money is not with individual purchases. It's with venues purchasing. So if you're a club or a bar, which I know a little bit about, right? And we want to air that pay-per-view, right?
It's gonna cost you a couple grand.
A lot of your buzz comes from marketing on that side because they want to market it as much as you do. So if
marketing
you're
on which side?
On the club business, you know, local marketing.
Yeah.
If you want to now air, let's say, the pay-per-view, whatever pay-per-view it is, you have to now call your cable provider. You get a rate based on how much seating that you have in your building. So it may cost you $20,000 or $15,000, whatever it is, to air that fight. That's a lot of money you're generating for the pay-per-view.
Sure.
Now with streaming, there is no set guideline on how you're going to be able to
air
this.
There isn't with that or the WWE Network either, right?
So WWE Network... And I've had to do this for one of the companies I do consulting for. They want to air pay-per-views. They want to air wrestling. I have spoken to their corporate offices and the corporate division for the WWE Network. They have nothing in line for airing pay-per-views right now. The only thing is
a laptop and an HDMI cable.
If it's a pay-per-view on cable, then you have to go through the proper channels,
but if
of
it's
purchasing.
Just a network WWE network.
What do you do? There's no corporate package.
That's so interesting. So because there's no buy-in.
There's no buy-in, yeah. So it's actually really backwards. And they're leaving a lot of money on the table with this. So the stream, and I don't know why, I don't know if it's a regulatory thing that they haven't finished. Because
I'm
it's
surprised
so
why
early.
They haven't done something to go, hey, you're a bar. But then again, how do you regulate that? It's just an IP address.
It's an IP address.
So then you'd have to regulate IP addresses.
Well, the way that they regulate really is that they send people around, they walk around,
right.
And there's a pay-per-view, and they say, hey, did you order this? How'd you order this?
Right.
You know?
And I'm surprised, there must be some type of technicality that either that or maybe pay-per-view has blocked that in an interesting way.
No, well, if it's not on TV,
right?
It's like ESPN is doing the same thing right now with ESPN Plus.
Right.
If a fight is on ESPN Plus, and maybe they're a little different. I don't know
for sure
how their ordering goes.
Yeah.
But if for WWE, to use them as a good example, they don't have anything in line. So if normally what they would do, like let's say WrestleMania weekend, if you're airing WrestleMania in your bar and
yeah.
they know you haven't purchased, the cable provider knows, you know, they send people. They walk around. They're like secret shoppers. They go to all the bars. They do it a lot for boxing and UFC.
Sure.
But they go to all the bars, and then they ask to see your paperwork if you ordered it.
Where are your papers?
Where are your papers?
Pay-per-view papers to show this SummerSlam event?
SummerSlam?
That's I'm fascinated by that.
Yeah.
With the business. I believe with DAZN, there's other... Their company has other things with an app or something as far as I think they also do. See, I don't want to speak out of turn and get.
But I'm curious what the future of that's going to be with
I think it's inevitable.
Because pay-per-view is going away.
I think it's going to go away. I don't think you can go back to it. I think it was a money grab for a long time. It's the same way. Remember when you first started renting cassettes, when VHS, people forget, like, first of all, VHS in general doesn't exist anymore, but there were video rental stores because it was too expensive to buy. To buy a video cassette when it first came out was like $60.
Yeah, it was very expensive.
Yeah. Very expensive. So then they did these things. Well, you can rent them. And even the rentals, though, were like $10.
$10,
like,
but you got it for 2 days. So
and then it eventually became, all right, well, you could rent it for $2.
Yeah.
Then it's like $1. Then it's like, please rent these.
Just here you go.
Then
take
it's
it.
We're out of business.
Yeah.
You know, so it's much like anything else, whether it's the cotton gin or whether it's, you know, the printed press. You got your money as best you could for a while, and now it changes. It's the same thing with music also. Music, they were gouging people.
Listen, that's now it's virtually $10, and you stream everything that you ever wanted.
Right.
You know?
So it's just inevitable, I think, and they got their money. And I think it's the last breaths of it. I mean, for the next at least 5 years, I would venture. There's still going to – some fights. But if a company like DAZN is able to continue signing fighters, them getting Canelo is huge. That's why they made the investment. You got to get somebody big, and it's going to eventually kill off pay-per-view. But going back to what I was saying before, so I cover boxing a little bit freelance for Fight Sports. And – so what I'm a very casual boxing fan, and I don't necessarily love the sport all the time, depending on the style of the fight. I don't like the clutching and grabbing, the Mayweather style, which I get into a lot of arguments with people. I find him to be a boring fighter. I don't find, but I love the Mexican style of going at it.
Pound for pound, yeah.
But what I find is, from a marketing standpoint, when I go to those press conferences, when they have a story, it intrigues me more.
Even in boxing.
So I don't know enough about boxing to be an expert by any means. So I covered an event on Monday, Shields and Hammer, two women fighters. And on the one side, you got a fighter. I believe she has 3 or 4 belts. On the other side, too. This is how novice I am. I don't know what weight division it is.
Yeah.
But they built it up in such a way. The story is, these are the best two fighters in the division. They're going to unify these belts. This is a fighter who is undefeated, 8-0. This is a fighter who's 4-0, saying she's the greatest of all time. You know, can the Olympian beat the veteran?
Yeah.
And they build that story. Then there's the I covered the next day, Canelo and Danny Jacobs, right? So what's the story there? The story there is Danny Jacobs. Canelo is the best fighter in the moment. In the moment, he's the top guy.
Yeah.
He's the most famous fighter. He's the number one fighter in the world as far as the public goes. Who is his opponent? Danny Jacobs. Why do I care about Danny Jacobs? Danny Jacobs is recovering from cancer. He was told he had a very small percentage to live, that he would barely be able to live a life, let alone compete in boxing.
Yeah.
And he has worked his way up, and it's his attempt to knock off Canelo. Those are the stories that interest me. Otherwise, yeah. I would not care. But even as a guy who, walking into it, didn't know about Shields or Hammer, I'm now intrigued. Now, if I see this fight, I want to see this fight. I want to know. I want to watch it.
Listen, how about the Tyson Fury and Wilder stuff?
That absolutely.
Was, right? When was the last time that a heavyweight fight was in the profile like that?
Right. But that's also the story. What's the story about it's Tyson Fury leaving, becoming champion, and then just leaving.
Yeah.
Just having to deal with depression, getting up to 400 pounds.
Yeah.
And having to work his way back.
And become a phenomenal boxer. And then dethrone Klitschko, right?
Right.
And by the way, the Klitschkos killed boxing.
In what sense?
It showed you between Wildermyr and Vitaly, it showed you that boxing in the heavyweight division became just so subpar, where right. these two guys essentially reigned for like 10 years. Right. The Klitschko brothers essentially, they...
And you think that's because it was a weak division?
I think it was a very weak division. I think right. the emphasis would... And now you're starting to see like, oh man, I love... See, the thing about me, I love heavyweight boxing.
Sure.
I grew up on that. I will con my grandmother and my grandfather were huge boxing fans, so I would watch heavyweight boxing. And what killed it was the clinching.
The clinching. That's the clinching what I hate about it. I keep calling it clutching and grabbing because I'm a hockey fan.
Okay.
Right. But it's the clinching. I can't stand it. The guy gets some momentum. Guy yeah. gets a lot of momentum, and to stop it, you clinch until yeah. the ref breaks it up, like a Catholic nun trying to separate you at a school dance. All right. And you're like, how many of these are going to go on before? Yeah.
By the way, that was Tyson's downfall.
Was the clinching?
The clinching, because he wasn't fighting in an era in the mid 80s
right.
where clinching was so prevalent. And when he came back to boxing,
it was a different
guys
game.
Evander Holyfield
yeah.
was big on clinching. So
and he couldn't that,
and Lennox
that.
Lewis big on clinching. Boxing kind of changed.
That's so interesting.
Where you,
I
lean,
never
on
that
guy,
like
you
that.
Lean on the guy.
Yeah.
You lean on the guy. And Tyson, once you lock Tyson up, he doesn't know what to do.
It's the method, not just physically. There's two things. One, you're stopping the momentum, but psychologically, you're changing the momentum.
Yeah.
Because if a guy can't land all those type of punches, or he doesn't have that positioning, it becomes frustrating for that person if they're not mentally capable of going that marathon,
yeah.
which Mayweather was.
Do you think do you think boxing to some extent is a work?
I don't think I don't think it's a work in the sense of the fighters making it a work. I do think there's a lot of incompetence in the judging.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of incompetence. There's a lot of nonsense going on in the fight world for sure. I mean, just look at the UFC and how long it took them to get to New York because some guy had an issue with the culinary union in Las Vegas.
That is exactly the reason, and people don't know that.
I mean, but that's absurd because the guy has some issue with somebody else in the culinary. Again, the food, the culinary union,
which
the
has
in Las Vegas, that bleeds into New York and them going, no, it's too violent.
Yeah,
a sport to have in New York City. You could do it in Newark
head trauma,
across the river.
But
right.
constant head trauma,
which
there
is
an argument that boxing is way more dangerous long term than mixed martial arts is, because with mixed martial arts, it's stopped immediately.
Yeah, once a person is knocked out, it's
you're
done.
Out.
There's no standing them up and giving them 8 seconds.
Yeah, you don't have a stand. Yeah, you don't. It doesn't work like that. I do think it's interesting. So kind of to go back to wrestling, this is why I love having you in, because
yeah.
we could talk about so many
sure,
different
man.
Things. And I'm sure this is going to be our conversation when we're having lunch.
Absolutely.
But, I do think that a lot of this ties in, right? Because with the boom of professional wrestling, a lot of this has to do with the fact that we have so much good talent, right?
Yeah.
Currently in pro wrestling, you look at guys like Ricochet and all these guys now in NXT that are getting called up.
It's an overabundance.
Would a Ricochet, what were his chances 10 years ago in pro wrestling if there was a Ricochet?
Oh, 10 years ago, there was a drought. It was just WWE. It was WWE yeah. and to an extent New Japan, but even New Japan wasn't at the place it's...
They were almost dead, man.
In a lull as yeah. well. So it wasn't even like you could do the thing of like, all right, I'll go to Japan and make some money. Even that was dead. And now everything... I'm interested to see how the landscape changes. You know, because now it's AEW coming around forces there to be competition salary-wise.
Well, what do you think of that? What do you think of AEW and everything that's going on with that?
I'm excited about it. I'm yeah. very happy about it. I think it's going to be great for people's salaries. That's the only way that your money gets right, let's be honest, is when there's competition from another side. because it's, and not just the money standpoint, the creative standpoint. Ziggler, I guess it occurred to me this morning, he's been off TV for 8 weeks or something, 6 weeks or something. I haven't seen him on Raw.
Yeah, but he does that every now and then.
He does that every now.
Yeah, he has, and by the way, he has a while on his contract.
Does he really? Yeah. I thought he wasn't. Oh, he just didn't want to sign the. They offered him an extension or something.
I think he did. I don't know. I don't know.
Interesting.
See, Ziggler's an interesting. I think for AEW, we're looking at him. Now that things have kind of settled and the excitement has kind of gone away a little bit,
yeah,
there's going to be multiple things that come and play a factor. Just selling out one show or two shows is not that... I mean, listen, it's a huge accomplishment, but it's not going to sustain audience.
There's still work to be done.
You need to put on a good product week after week. You know, this is the problem.
I will say this, and this is where the storyline comes in. When I watched their first pay-per-view, they've only done one pay-per-view, correct? A Double or Nothing is the second one.
Well, Double or Nothing is the first one, AEW, but it's the second one. Yeah.
In the line of the Elite guys. When I watched the Elite, every match they had did have a storyline in it. Now, some of them you'd have to be a fan and watch their YouTube program to follow it, but every match had a sort of logic to it. That they built up, and I think that's why they're going to be in a good position, because they really care about that stuff, and that's what you need to compete. I think that's might be a problem with other companies, that it's a little bit hard to compete from that creative standpoint with the WWE.
I think there's multiple factors, right? Your TV deal plays a big part in it.
Yes.
Where are you going to be? And hopefully they'll be on where we're hearing they're going to be rumored on.
Yeah, that was the rumor. Can't announce it. Don't want to get sued.
Yeah, well,
I don't know why I said it like Ricky Gervais. Don't want to get sued.
Yeah, I did say some things, and I don't want to say it anymore because things are changing every day.
Yeah.
So then I look like an idiot.
Just throw the word allegedly around.
Allegedly, yeah.
Allegedly around.
That is my favorite thing to do.
Yeah. Well, by the way, you can make announcements all day long. They don't have to be true.
None of them have to be
true. Like, I can announce right now that I am the new color commentator for AEW. I'm making that announcement here.
Right now.
Yeah, it's not true.
It doesn't have
to
be true.
But I did announce it.
You did announce
it. I did announce it. So,
but... You know, right now the TV is going to play a major part. The amount of finance that they have for marketing, their ability to market, who they hire to market. WWE reigned supreme because they always had a superior marketing department.
Sure, but they had a marketing department, but they also had something to market.
They also had something to market.
Right, that's the big difference. But I do think, let's say they don't end up, something happens to that TV deal that we're hearing about. It goes away and it doesn't happen.
I think they're in big trouble.
You think they're in big trouble?
I think they're in big trouble.
Even for the amount of money that they spent.
People are saying maybe they should go to the internet. I think they are in big trouble if they don't have the TV deal, because they need TV money to sustain.
TV money is still big money and people forget
you're
that.
You're talking 60 million. I mean, 30 million is nothing for a TV rights deal. Let's say we're talking 60 million a year for TV.
Sure.
And let's assume Turner's going. It was a Turner property.
Okay.
And they're paying the production costs because Turner has...
And that alleviates the entire production cost. Yeah.
That alleviates the entire production cost for week after week TV, which is, as you know, very expensive.
Sure.
That alleviates having to worry about selling the ads, because you have a network that is selling your ads. They have a... ad department, because they know TV.
They have a promotional department that falls within their budget already.
Marketing to P2 and P3 viewership, where you're not just relying on your core audience.
Right. It allows you to grow an audience.
We're pro wrestling, right?
Yeah.
We're Capital Wrestling. We are a P1 product. You cater to that demo that is a super fan of professional wrestling,
sure, yeah,
that wants to go to an independent wrestling show.
Yes.
That is a fraction of the P1.
Sure. Right.
So how do you target those guys? Well, you do it based on wrestling sites. You do it based on all this other stuff.
Things like this.
I'm here to
promote the event.
I gave away a ticket for Capital Wrestling to a viewer.
How dare you?
I gave away a ticket.
She
wants one ticket.
Yeah, that's fine.
Taylor, one of our viewers, she sent me a message. She's coming to New York for WrestleMania week. And I said, you know what? If you come to New York for WrestleMania week, I'll give you a ticket for
Capital
Wrestling. So I can give her a
pair of tickets. You have to give them in
pairs. She's by herself.
Oh, really?
She's by herself.
Oh.
You could give her two.
Yeah, I don't know. Usually they give a pair of tickets. So
no, she wants one.
I won a contest once, and this, just so you know, it was through MySpace. This is how long ago it was. It was the MySpace Top 8 Comedians, and it was for the Disney movie Ratatouille.
Oh, my God.
Right? And so... it was a contest, and the top three, it went from top 8, and they vote top 3, and I won a trip to Los Angeles.
Yeah.
I got a trip to Los Angeles, two tickets.
Two tickets.
Not on the same place, in the same spot on the plane.
Oh my God. Two different sides.
Two different plots. And you're like, hey, Disney money?
Yeah, that's
MySpace
Disney
money.
Amazing, right?
You guys, what? You know? Anyway, whatever. I was just busting
balls.
That's
hysterical.
I just always like when they say, oh, give away two pairs of tickets.
Giving away two pairs of tickets to go to Las Vegas.
REO Speedwagon, two tickets.
Where did you go? What was it for?
It was a contest to the winner was going to open for Patton Oswalt because they were doing these tours
cool.
to promote. Him and Janine Garofalo were doing these tours to promote Ratatouille. They were both in the movie Ratatouille, yeah. and they did some shows at the Troubadour in L.A. So they sent the top three finalists from this MySpace competition.
It was you.
It was myself, Mike Drucker, and a guy named Christian Reyes.
Where are they now?
Mike Drucker is a very successful writer.
Okay.
Who has written on a number of different shows. I think he also wrote for Seth Meyers at one point. I think Jimmy Fallon, a White House correspondent. He's doing very well for himself. But the other kid was a kid from Utah, very unknown kid from Utah. And I was the better comedian out of all of them. I mean, literally, yeah. Mike was like, you're going to kick my ass in this comment. I'm like, yeah,
who won?
Let's...
Did you win?
Well, here's the problem with that. Here's what happens. So I went out to Los Angeles, whatever. They have you go at the Hollywood Improv. The acts that went on before us were not particularly good.
Yeah.
And these were regular acts.
So you're seeing, you're saying, okay, I'm good. I got this. I'm better. Because, you know, I have a couple... quite a few stand-up comedy fans.
Yeah, yeah.
You know when you see another comic set, you're like, okay, I know what I'm going to... I know what to stay away from, and I know what to do based on
how they
perform.
Well, I know how to win the audience back. But here's the problem. So I went up there, and the crowd was dead.
Yeah.
So...
Not fun.
Mike didn't do that well. He's very funny. Yeah. He was very young at the time. Didn't do that well. Didn't get a lot of responses. Christian Reyes went up. He didn't do that well either. Nice kid. Did not do, to the point where he was like, literally whispered, I'm so nervous, into the microphone, which
Which is and like, how long was the set supposed to be?
They were like five minute sets. They're very short sets.
The longest 5 minutes of the
But the thing is, if it doesn't go, if it's not going well, 5 minutes is an eternally long
You look down, it's 2 minutes, 15 seconds.
So I go up and the crowd is dead. And for the first minute, they're not giving me anything. And so I know I got to flip this around. So I turn on the crowd a little bit, but I win them all back. But I did some like sort of religious material, like atheist material
Didn't
or whatever. It went over great.
Oh, okay.
I destroyed.
Yeah.
And people are congratulating me on winning the thing. And the judges gave it to Christian Reyes.
Really?
Because I think my material was... too controversial for their contest.
Oh,
they didn't want me, the judges, who have nothing to do with Patton Oswalt.
Had nothing to do with
right.
it. Right.
Yeah. And so I got robbed.
Who were
in
the
that.
Judges?
I have no clue to this day.
That's
but
really
I assume
funny.
It's some executives or somebody involved with something.
What a stand up comedy is worse than pro wrestling.
In many ways.
Yeah.
Show business is worse
show
than
business is
pro
worse
wrestling. Well that's the other aspect of it. Like when you go anytime you go, oh, this guy's good, why don't they have a contract? Just imagine that by 1,000.
Yeah.
In show business. That was a long story. I apologize, but
No. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, it was the equivalent of winning a boxing match and going to the scorecards and having the judges go, "Nope, it's a draw."
Yeah.
What?
That's are what you, happened with Tyson Fury,
are
right?
Are you shitting me?
Tyson Fury was a draw.
What was the one before that one though? I forgot. There was like a hugely one where you're like, "Are you out of your mind?"
It happens so often.
The Tyson Fury one wasn't bad, but the one before
Well, he got knocked out in the last round and sat up like the Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
That was,
he
that
almost
was,
lost that fight. Yeah.
It was the last round, and he got knocked out, and he's just popped up like the Undertaker.
Well,
people actually dubbed the Undertaker scene with him doing the setup.
Well, because he was, when you say knocked out, you know, they do the eight count. This was not a standing eight count. He was on the ground.
He was on the ground, yeah.
For eight, got up at nine, almost like it was a work, but
yeah.
It wasn't.
You know what? I think everything is a work. I think
sure
baseball's a work.
Sure.
I think basketball's a work. I can't watch basketball without thinking it's all a work.
Well, I mean, in all fairness, they did indict a referee a couple years back because it turns out it's to some aspect it was.
Well, you know what
work.
Though? Is that necessary? Listen, I get so much shit with this, right? Like I am when it comes to steroids in sports.
Okay.
I have a very like with pro wrestling, I understand the health reasons. I understand. I understand that it is a bad thing because you could but a little testosterone here and there. I want my guys a little jacked up. I have a very different outlook, but that's because I come from a bodybuilding background
sure.
in my family. But when it comes to sports,
have,
for example.
And you have used, I do believe.
I have, yeah.
Yes, okay.
Yeah,
this is not a secret?
No, it's not a secret. No.
I know you use.
Yeah, I got in phenomenal shape. I dropped about 35 pounds of fat, and I had a 10% body fat makeup, and I got really in good shape. I was 175 solid muscle. The thing is, I don't think it what it does, it gives you a little boost.
Sure.
Right? Yeah. It gives you, it just makes your testosterone work a little bit better. It burns fat quicker. I don't look at it as cheating. I look at it as an enhancement. Things sure. that we do now, like hyperbolic chambers, could that right. be considered cheating? Because you're doing a process.
Did
that...
you read Sean Avery's book at all? Did you
get no.
To read Sean Avery's book?
No, okay, I haven't.
So there's no steroids in hockey. It doesn't. It just doesn't.
Why
make
would you?
Any.
Yeah.
It doesn't. You don't need it. You don't need the extra. It'll only slow you down to put on extra.
Or it's quite possible that there is, and we don't. Really...
No, he was. It was kind of like ball four. He was kind of outing what there is. Are there like adrenaline shots that they do give you?
Yeah.
And things like that, which are legal.
Sure.
He goes, so you don't need the, steroids because having more weight would only slow you down. It wouldn't do anything for you if you don't have the natural. But they have things like adrenaline shots that they do.
Yeah.
So if those things help out, I understand the argument against steroids in competitive sports on account of if there's nobody to regulate the use of it, you could go to extremes.
Yeah,
and then,
sure.
And then
that's
you end
what
up
happens.
With what happens in baseball where Craig Biggio, tears both his hamstrings running from Renault. Just walk into first base.
I got into a big argument over steroids in baseball where I say if it wasn't for steroids in baseball would not have made the comeback that they did.
Oh, absolutely. There's no
the
doubt
strike.
About that. I wish they'd let some in now. I find baseball to be so boring.
Well, there is. Steroids in baseball exist, and this is the go-around how this works.
Okay.
Steroids aren't the traditional steroids that we know of, the 80s and 70s. Steroids now, I think it's a wrong term that we're doing. We should talk more like TRT. And
okay.
HGH and things like that, testosterone replacement therapy in baseball exists. If I told you the number of players that are doing it, it would astound you. The level of athletes that are doing
it. So we're still testing it for the way we tested it in the early 90s.
So no, the way that we're doing it now, and the way there's a loophole with this.
Right.
So if you are a young athlete with a promising future. Your agents, your managers, your trainers get a hold of you and they say, listen, you're going to go to a doctor. Mm. I'm not saying this is happening to anybody. I'm giving you an example of what I have heard and been told.
Okay.
Or maybe the guys, you go to the doctor now. You're 20 years old. You're
say,
in the minors.
Hey, Bryce. Oh, never mind.
Yeah, you're in the minors, playing
allegedly.
AAA ball. You go to the doctor and you say, listen, I'm a little tired. I can't. I'm losing my energy. I'm 20 years old. This shouldn't be happening. I have no sex life. And the doctor goes, oh, let's do a test. It's a spectrum for testosterone. There's no like you're on point. A healthy range.
Sure. Yeah.
For a 30 year old man could be anywhere from a 220 free range testosterone to a 900.
Right.
It's a range. So if you are, let's say, on the 500 level and the doctor goes, well, he's not feeling well, but maybe like a year ago, he was in the thousands. He's a young athlete. And something happened. Maybe he dropped in testosterone. It happens. Maybe he's depressed. Maybe he's not eating well. We're going to give him a script for TRT.
Right.
Testosterone. You don't use it. Maybe you don't use that script. You it shows that you had, or you do use it, whatever.
Yeah.
It shows that you had a pre-existing condition and now you're in the majors with this pre-existing condition. So now when you're 35,
they can't. Pop you.
You start doing it and you are now in the renaissance of your career because you're knocking 50, 60 home runs.
Right. It
is a loophole.
It's sort of like the medical marijuana.
I'm okay with
sort
that.
Of, yeah.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem with that because everything is a franchise now. Everybody wants that marquee player. It doesn't help anybody when at 35 years old, these guys are fatiguing their careers because they're starting to play baseball at 9 years old. Or 6 years old.
Right, right.
You got to protect your brand. There's a lot of...
I don't mind that. You just want it to be... I mean, for the sake of sportsmanship, you'd like it to be some regulation where...
I want Barry Bonds on every team.
Listen,
I want
I'd
Mark McGwire, and I
if
want Barry
Bonds.
If you're
willing to shorten your life to make that... To me, baseball's so boring.
I want them to look like ridiculous cartoons of themselves.
Sure.
And just knocking balls like 800
but I just,
feet.
I love the idea that we had... Bud Selig was like, I don't know how this...
Yeah, how does this happen?
I mean, where did this? This is a shock to me. Really, it's a shock to you that the home run record stood. It was broken once in about 60 years, and then within 3 years, they broke it 4 times.
Yeah.
And you weren't suspicious about that at all?
Yeah. How are they doing
it? The one guy broke it twice, you weren't suspicious about that at all.
I think the Mets, the New York Mets, should be given a pass, and every player should be on some sort of testosterone with them. Just so, you know, it's a curve.
I think they should be given drugs just to be able to tolerate playing for the Mets.
Yeah, to be quite honest.
And I, again, shout out to Bobby Bonilla, who made the greatest financial decision.
What is it, 2036?
Is that the year? I just know that he's going to be, once Bryce Harper's done.
2031 is Bryce Harper's, and he's 2036. Bobby Bonilla signed a contract in 1998.
Okay, so for people who don't know, the Mets were financial trouble in 1998. So they said, how about this? Instead of us paying you all your money at once, we'll defer it to you in smaller payments with interest for, I still don't understand how financially they did this.
They pay him $1.2 million every July 1st, every year. Bobby Bonilla gets paid.
He hasn't played baseball in about 15 years at this point.
Bobby Bonilla has not played baseball for a long time. His contract ends 2033 or 2034, something.
Why would they
like
even
that.
Do that? That doesn't even make sense from a loan standpoint of going, hey, we need enough money to just get through the next five years.
They got Bobby Bonilla after an injury, I believe.
Well, but he wasn't in the prime, I don't think. He was,
He was not. A man who last played baseball 5,381 days ago.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. Every July till 2035, he will get paid $1.2
million. 2035.
Can you imagine? So they owe him, I believe, that it turned out to be a $29 million deal.
Yeah.
The Mets owe Bobby Bonilla $5.9 million for the 2000 season and no longer wanted him. So the club negotiated with Gilbert to attach an 8% annual interest rate on the money, with the clock starting at the year 2000. That added up to $29.8 million. The first installment of the payout came July 1st, 2011, and the Mets will pay their sixth installment on Friday. This is a couple years ago.
Can't they pay all of it off at once? I guess not.
I don't know. Maybe he doesn't want to. He's like, no.
Well, maybe I guess if he signed it, why would he?
I think his wife... I can't remember, but his wife negotiated this, or his wife is very intelligent and negotiated this, I think.
Maybe she caught him off guard. They have no idea.
Listen, maybe she just threw numbers and they're like, all right, yeah whatever.
Yeah, it sounds fine.
Can you imagine that bloated? I mean, what a
disaster.
It's the
most insane thing.
I got before we wrap it up here, I do want to talk about Capital Wrestling a little bit more.
Yes,
I can talk
March
to you
9th,
about
come out to Hoboken March 9th, 301 Garden Street. That's where we're going to be taping
next week.
Set of tapings next week. March 9th, come on out. It's going to be fun. You're going to have a great time. It's different than any other independent wrestling show happening right now. And I know everyone says that, but this we mean it.
If you could improve a couple things, what would it be?
With Capital Wrestling?
Yeah.
It's hard to say because we are doing so much with the crew that we have. And the reason this gets done is more passion. It's a lot of talent in the right places, but it's more passion than it is like anything else.
Yeah.
Because, for example, our guy, Zane Decker, the director, he's not doing it for the money. The money is not what's driving him. He has a passion to do it because if it was money, he wouldn't do it because it doesn't make sense financially. For me, it's the same thing. I love doing it. Matt loves doing it. Everyone involved loves doing it. And if it was just a money thing, if it was about paydays, it wouldn't happen. So it's hard to say. We would like more money for sure so we could do more things like upgrade production to be able to get guarantees so we could pay some of the talent more to make sure we have them. I'm trying to think of what else we could do. I mean, just upgrade the production to be honest. Like just
better lighting.
Just better lighting. I mean, we you know, Ronnie Burton is somebody who is not just a wrestler, but he is in charge of the set design, so to speak.
Yeah.
And a lot of the lighting and a lot
the
of
the lighting looks it's improved tremendously.
Yeah. And a lot of that thanks to him.
I told Matt, I'm like, you guys have to work on the audio a little bit.
Yeah. The audio is all right. So
a
that's
little,
one of those
bit.
Things. Absolutely. And that's one of those things that's a little bit hard because that's one of our weaknesses, but we don't have a guy who really knows that well.
Yeah.
And also sometimes time is a thing, you know, where everybody's doing 10 jobs at once. And the audio is something definitely that we've had to fix. It frustrates me more than anything because it's my voice on commentary. So I get furious if my voice can't be heard from a selfish emotional standpoint, but also from a TV production standpoint. It's the same thing I would yell at when I see other companies. When I see another company shoot something and they have the background lighting. You're like, oh, don't you know anything that you're not supposed to light the background?
No, don't write the black. Because
then the ring is dark.
Yeah.
And, you know, whatever. So,
but these are all things that you learn. Yeah. That's growing pains. You learn it. You kind of evolve and you go forward from there. And I think that's the amazing thing. March 9th in Hoboken. Where can people get tickets for this?
Follow all our social media. Everything is up there. Capital Wrestling on Instagram, Facebook, Capital Wrestling, Capital Wrestling on Twitter. And all the links are up there.
You're also debuting on the Fight Network in the United Kingdom.
We're very excited about that. Yeah.
What's your time slot for that? Do you have it?
I believe it's Saturday nights at 11:30.
Nice.
Which is not bad.
It's
not bad place to be. But you know, we're on fight here in the US. We're on internationally in a couple places that we're working on. I don't want to make all the announcements, but we're trying for Germany. Soon, that's in the works.
WXW, they're doing great over there in Germany.
I mean, wrestling is having a real resurgence all over the world, and we're pushing to be a part of that internationally too, because that's the other beauty of this time, where we don't need a TV deal.
How about Armenia? Do you want to get a TV deal in Armenia?
I would love to do it just to get a TV deal in Armenia.
If you get a TV deal in Armenia, I will show up every week and cut promos in Armenian.
In Armenian?
Just for that TV deal.
Absolutely. I'll do the commercials.
I'll do the commercials. I'll do the flag. I'll wave the flag. I'll do a whole thing.
I want to do that thing where once we get all the markets in place, I mean, it never stops, but I do want to do one of those things where I have to rotate and constantly change the hats and the flags wave. Like,
we're coming to you live in Milan, Italy.
Yeah, Zimbabwe. Capital Wrestling is coming to you.
The great Udi.
The great power Udi.
Is he dead?
He is not dead. He is in jail for allegedly murdering his wife.
Oh, the great power Udi killed his wife.
Allegedly. Let's not rush to judgment, Zarian. Yeah, the courts in whatever country he's in.
We don't want to jump to judgment.
Let's let the justice system do what they do.
I think there's so much going on. You guys are doing a great job.
Yeah, thank you.
I'm proud to be involved with you guys and promote you guys and talk about you guys. I talked to Matt, and he's a very, very talented guy.
Yeah, he's a workhorse. He's the heart and spirit of it. There wouldn't be a Capital Wrestling without him.
Listen, to put it together every single week. Make sure it's on. You have to take it. I was told great advice years ago. In order for a hobby to turn into a business, you have to treat it as that.
Yeah.
So it shouldn't be a hobby. It should be your job. This is your job. This is what you're doing. How would you do this if you were, you know, you were expected to perform at this level?
And it becomes a job. And it's the worst type of job, because it's the type of job that's not paying money.
We're not getting
rich off this. Not yet. But that's not why we did it. You know, it's a passion project. It's the most fun I've had creatively doing color commentary since I started doing stand-up years ago, since I've been doing sketch comedy. For me, we talk about not making your work. A lot of people are like, oh, are you out there doing other companies and stuff? And I'm kind of like, you know what? I don't really want to. I don't want to have to go venue to venue and do the whole thing and try to get in the thing. I just want to enjoy it, you know, for once. And but being the owner and being on camera has been such a tremendous amount of fun. There's so many people who work behind the scenes, and I'll name as many as I can. Mike Kaufman, Greg Messi, and people like our interns Ben and I'm forgetting so many. It's like an Oscar speech.
I hate naming names, but every single
one of them really puts a lot of effort into it, you know.
Yeah. I highly suggest you guys check it out. Harry, I could have you on for hours.
Oh, thank you.
But I am very hungry.
Oh, yeah, so
it's
am
like
I.
You know, this is like my version of Joe Rogan.
Oh,
could
really?
You be my Alex Jones today?
I mean, it makes more sense.
At lunch, I want to talk to you about interdimensional beings.
About Nazis?
About space Nazis? Space Nazis. That's what we're going to
talk about. We're talking about space Nazis. That's what we're going to be talking about. They're going to attack you. Joe Rogan, I'm coming for you. Those promos were insane, by the way. He was cutting promos.
I'm coming for you, Joe.
Let me tell you something, Joe. You know what? I know your secrets. You have time now and tomorrow to decide if you're going to give your life over to Jesus Christ. Like, what?
You know what's the best? He actually at one point said that he's going to kill Joe Rogan, and then he goes, not physically. Emotionally. Metaphorically, I'm going to kill you. Metaphorically,
he's got a lawyer waving his hand. Yeah. By which I mean,
I'm going to decapitate your whole family. I mean, metaphorically.
Metaphorically speaking.
Guys, I really enjoyed it. So this is something we're going to be doing a little bit more of, these interviews.
Great, man.
Talk about, you know, it's obviously everything involves pro wrestling that we do here at MMN, but I kind of want it to be a little bit more than pro wrestling and just get to know people within the wrestling industry and wrestling business that are doing some really cool stuff that I like. I think next week Justin Robert Young is on.
Wow. Satellite, or is he here?
Satellite.
Oh,
Satellite.
Man.
Via satellite.
I miss my brother. We went to high school together.
I know. Before we wrap it up, I want to tell that story. So sure. I met Harry on Lunatic Radio.
Yes.
Because you would do that show all the time. Yes. They would have a bunch of comics on. You would go in. I went in, and they lived a couple blocks away from me, and they were doing the show on the network, and I became friends with Rock and with Kieran. And I went in, they're like, oh, stand-up comic Harry Turjanian. And
Armenians.
And I'm like, oh, that's an Armenian name. Other Armenians. Yeah, of course. You don't run into a lot of them.
Yeah.
So we did the show, and it was great. And I didn't see you for a while.
Yeah.
I think I was talking to the Cringe Humor guys, and like there was like this weird mish, but I hadn't seen Harry in years.
Yeah.
So I met Justin through his podcast with Brian Brushwood, and I was a guest on it a couple times. And Justin messaged me and said, hey, listen, I'm coming to New York for I forgot what, but he's coming to the Ring of Honor show.
Yeah.
And he's supposed to stay with his buddy in Jersey City, and his friend is not answering the phone. Can by any chance, do I have room for him? I said, absolutely, I got room for you. Tomorrow is, I think it was like Mother's Day or somebody's
something.
It was some sort of, it was somebody's birthday.
Yeah.
I was like, I got a party at my house. If you want to stay afterwards and hang out, that's cool. He came here. We went into the city and he goes, oh man, my friend is here at the show. I want to introduce you. And I go, Harry? And he goes, how do you know each other?
Yeah, it's a small world.
Weird, small world.
So here's what happened on my end, just so you know. He sent
You did not want him to stay with you.
No, not at all. No, what happened was he sent me a text, and then it's one of those things, either I didn't see the follow-up. I'm like, yeah, come and stay.
Yeah.
And then I never saw the follow-up text
that's
from
hysterical.
Him. And he didn't send anything after that.
Yeah, like, that's hysterical.
And I had kind of forgot about it. I was just running around doing so many things.
But what were the odds that he was the friend? And it
oh,
was
my God. Like, it was so close. It was a great night, though.
It was a lot of fun. That was actually... My wife was recently pregnant.
Yeah.
And she was not feeling well at all. Yeah, she was getting so nauseous and so tired.
Oh, yeah.
Because that show went to like 12:30.
Oh, they would do long shows.
Yeah. That was
fun. You got your money's worth at Ring of Honor.
That was a lot of fun. But it just shows you know, everything is very small. The universe is very small. And if sometimes people connect. You know, talking about Alex Jones, I feel like sometimes people are meant to connect.
I think they are.
I think interdimensionally we have connected.
Yeah. As long as we don't run into any space Nazis, I'm good.
Ladies and gentlemen. Guys, Harry Turjanian on Twitter, Facebook, everywhere. Follow him. Also follow Capital Wrestling. They're putting on great shows. If you live in the Northeast, if you're from the New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, Pennsylvania area, I highly suggest checking out Capital Wrestling. Watch their TV. They have a YouTube channel, obviously.
Yeah.
They're on Fight
Facebook.
Network. They're on Facebook. They're everywhere you could imagine. I would never endorse a product that I don't like or I wouldn't be a fan of. We have had multiple wrestling promotions want to work with us, promote us, invite us. I don't want to go to any of them because a lot of them suck. Right. Obviously, not all of them suck, but a lot of them suck. Capital Wrestling.
Or they just don't interest you necessarily.
They don't interest
something
me.
Different.
Listen,
you know?
They don't interest me, but a lot of times the production is crappy. You know, you got five people in the audience. It's just depressing. This is a lot of fun going to these shows.
Yeah.
These guys put on a lot of work. The amount of effort that goes into putting on a consistent show every time and building a following and building an audience, it's a lot of work. If you live in the area, I definitely check them out. March 9th in Hoboken. It's a very easy
301
trip.
301 Garden Street.
301 Garden Street.
Yeah, and also, you can watch episodes now on YouTube. They're up on YouTube. I would subscribe to our Facebook and YouTube. We show a lot of promos that really get you involved in what's going on. And
it's very easy to jump into.
Yeah, we got some really unique characters. Portia Vaughn, Zach Amico is incredible at what he does as well. I mean, so many great people that I forget to
mention. And when we get syndication in Armenia,
My hope is to get enough syndication where I could do like a goodwill tour where I have to go. But unannounced, where they're like, why are you here? I mean, we got the footage. Yeah. You don't need to. No. I want to
go to North Korea.
We're trying to get on in France. I mean, we want to get all over the place. We want to be international.
A promo on the Eiffel Tower.
I'd be down. I'd be down with that.
Yeah. All right, guys. That's it for this week. Next week, we have Justin Robert Young via satellite, as Harry put it.
I'm only disappointed because I can't. If he was in town, I'd be like, yes.
No, that would have been great. I haven't seen him in a while, so.
He's rarely out here. He's busy doing his podcast on the West Coast.
He's killing
man.
It.
He's doing fantastic.
Justin Robert. Actually, he was supposed to be on yesterday. We both forgot.
You both forgot.
We both forgot he was supposed to be on yesterday. It's funny.
Oh, I
think we're rescheduling with Conrad Thompson also. Conrad was supposed to be on Monday.
Oh, that's great. I love Conrad. I've never met him, but I love that.
And then we have Jason Agnew coming on from formerly of Live Audio Wrestling, now Sunday Night's Main Event on in Canada on radio there, and we have a whole bunch of guests coming on. So I think, oh, you know who else?
Yeah,
Mike Law. I got Mike Law. Yeah. I got scheduled Mike Law, and a couple other people coming on.
The colossal Mike Law.
The colossal Mike Law. We'll see y'all next time, guys. Take care.